Are we going now?
Yeah, I started us back up again.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. All guns, no control. I'm Dave, joined by my out of control
co-host. I feel like I'm the control to your guns.
Maybe. But he's Ryan. I'm Dave. Our tagline for this week, all guns, no control. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you are right and we pick you, we will fire over a free Movies on Up prize package for you. This week, something a little different for us. We touched on it at the end of last week when we were rambling before we said goodbye. It Comes at Night opens this weekend.
It Comes this weekend.
It Comes this weekend. The new horror movie from A24 Films, who've been distributing a lot of movies for the last few years. They launched in 2013 with Glimpse Inside the Mind of Charles Swan, which starred Charlie Sheen, who was not the Charlie Sheen of the 80s at this point, directed by Roman Coppola. They kind of burst onto the scene in 2013 because after that they had Spring Breakers, which got a lot of attention.
That's not the other Coppola, is it?
That is Harmony Korine.
No, that's right.
But then The Bling Ring
was
also right after that, which was Sofia Coppola. Yeah. Spring Breakers and The Bling Ring, I feel like, got a lot of attention, maybe not for the best reasons. But then also in 2013, Spectacular Now, directed by James Ponsell. That was 4 years ago. Since then, they've released 45 movies, not including...
Including but not limited to...
Not including the ones they have coming out this year. So already this year, we've seen Free Fire come out, and then It Comes at Night, and there was that...
Trespass Against Us, The Black Coat's Daughter.
Yeah. So, I mean, they've...
The Lovers.
Yeah, they are putting out a lot of movies, and a lot of good movies. A lot of really good movies.
I think Woodshock just got a trailer this week, if I'm not mistaken. That's the Kirsten Dunst flick that comes out, I think, in like September.
Yeah, and they just announced the release date for The Disaster Artist, which is getting an award season prime. They just won Best Picture for Moonlight. So this
I think they were nominated for, what, 8 Oscars for that? So they won Best Actor and Best Picture.
20th Century Women, I think, got a screenplay nomination. So
they've got some Oscars before. That was not their first.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, just this year.
Yeah.
So they've only been around since 2013, but they've been busy with a lot of quality movies. So we thought, of all the studios to do, why not do this one? Because I know we each like at least a couple handfuls of these. So we're doing our favorite movies from A24. There'll probably be some crossover. I know I have like a dozen also ran, so I can swap them out if I have to.
And for a studio that's really been quote unquote in existence since 2013, so just 4 years, and really 3.5 years worth of movies we could choose from, you would think that there would be a lot of crossover, but there are so many great movies. And this is one of the, on the one hand, it was the easy list to do because there were a lot of great movies to pick from. The hard part is, like, you know, with an actor, there's something that bonds them all together. If it's the same actor, same director, whatever it is, or movies that have, that share a theme, our favorite crime movies, whatever it is. These movies are only held together by the fact that they're put out by this production company. And I would be willing to bet that we'd name these 5 movies, or these 10 movies, or probably 9, because there's at least one that's crossover between the two. And you probably could tell us some of the stars. You might be able to tell us the directors, but you'd never. And to be honest with you, I didn't know that all these were put out by A24 until I looked. And then I was like, holy shit, these guys are awesome.
There's a wide range of stuff they're doing, too. But there's a lot of good directors that they've worked with, and a lot of good actors. So
yeah, absolutely.
They have a lot going for them, and they don't seem to be slowing down at all. So let's go ahead and get into it. Ryan, your number 5 favorite movie distributed by A24.
It was from the beginning of last year. It was like a February release. It is Robert Eggers' The Witch, starring, and at that point, unknown, Anya Taylor-Joy, Ralph Ineson, and Katie Dickey. You mentioned working with some big-time directors. Eggers is a guy that was like a production design fella. This was his first big-time, I don't even call it like a big-time studio release, but this was his directorial debut. And he had put a lot on Anya Taylor-Joy, who, like I said, at that point, really didn't have much on her resume, but she was phenomenal in this movie. This is her movie from front to back. And I think it got maybe a little bit more buzz than a horror movie in February may normally get. I think a lot of it was due to her, but to see her just about a year later with Split and Maggie, Morgan before that.
She's cast in
the New Mutants
X-Force
movie.
Yeah, New
yeah,
Mutants.
Whatever that is, yeah. With another Game of Thrones.
Macy Williams.
Yeah, right. She was phenomenal in this movie. And I can remember going to movies at the end of 2014, I guess, start of 2015, and seeing trailers for this and thinking, oh my God.
It looked creepy.
Yeah, this looked like it was going to be an incredible horror movie. And it turned out it's a good one. Eggers did a great job of building suspense in this movie. There's some great visuals in it. It's sort of a slow burn. It's not your jump scare or gore fest, certainly. I mean, it reminds me a little bit of Blair Witch. I mean, that's one of the... Follow me on this. It's one of the better horror movies that had come out for like a decade, but it doesn't have a lot of gore in it. Mechanically, the movies aren't the same. It's not found footage. It's not shaky cam. But we are talking about witches, and it's more the aura surrounding the witch as opposed to seeing the actual witch herself or whatever itself, I guess. And this trailer basically was the greatest hits of this movie. I was a little bit let down because the trailer was phenomenal. Like, Legion, where that trailer...
It was a good trailer.
Yeah, it was the best trailer ever, and the movie was just a solid movie. I think The Witch is kind of the same way, but at the very least, it introduced me to Anya Taylor-Joy, who was phenomenal in this movie, and she's been great since then.
She's great, yeah. She's great in everything, and we're going to see a lot more of her over the next couple of years. I like this movie. It's good. I always talk about world building, and it did a good job. I mean, it is essentially a period piece, but it takes you there right away, and you feel like you're there. You understand this culture and the world they're living in.
Yeah, I mean, it's 1620s Massachusetts.
Because a lot of times they try to do period pieces, and you're taken out of it either by an accent or by the dialogue or something. This felt good.
Felt very authentic.
Yeah, so it was a solid movie. My number five... Written and directed by Stephen Knight, came out in 2014, starring one of my favorite actors, and only him, pretty much. It was Tom Hardy in Locke. It's a movie of Tom Hardy in a car that's not Mad Max Fury Road. It's just him making various phone calls, but the cast that they got to be the voices on the other end, Olivia Colman, amazing actress. Ruth Wilson, I think one of the most underrated actresses right now. Tom Holland, a great actor. These are people that signed on just for voice roles. It is just a movie of Tom Hardy driving. He's a construction manager who has a great wife and a son that he loves. And he did have an affair, and she is pregnant and having his baby. So he leaves his construction site on the day before the biggest presentation of his career to go be in the hospital for the birth of his mistress's...
His bastard child.
Yeah, so... It's phone call after phone call, him calling his boss to let him know what's going on, him calling his wife and having to confess to that, him having to have that conversation with his son. It's a really good movie. It's compelling. It's hard to have a movie that's just one guy in a car for 90 minutes and make it be compelling. It's a little easier when that one guy is Tom Hardy, because I'd go on any road trip with him. It's compelling. It's suspenseful in a way. Like, it's tense. It's an intense movie for just watching one guy on screen.
My number four also is basically stars one guy. That one guy is Paul Dano. He shares the screen with the body of Daniel Radcliffe. Mary Elizabeth Winstead also shows up late in Dan Kwan's Swiss Army Man from 2016. This is a tough one to kind of explain, because it's sort of all over the place. It is 97 minutes of gross out comedy, as well as really, really dark character study in loneliness. And I love a good fart joke as much as the next guy. But after about 90 minutes straight of fart jokes, this movie could be an absolute dumpster fire. You have Paul Dano, who's stranded on this island, Castaway style. And Daniel Radcliffe shows up, literally washes on shore, doing his best Weekend at Bernie's, where he's, for the most, I say for at least the first half of the movie, he's a glorified prop. That's about it. As Dano descends into madness, we get a little bit more life, a little bit more animation from Daniel Radcliffe, who's playing the dead body, Manny, the Swiss Army man, who basically his dead powers manage to get Dano out of some tough spots. And if you're able to sort of not take what you're seeing literally, I think it's a really interesting movie. It's a really interesting story. It certainly doesn't feel like it's, oh, a dead guy with filtration properties and you can fight off a bear with dead guy farts, like making a blowgun out of him. That is not something we see every day. And I think that Dano specifically did a wonderful job in this movie. He's super, super captivating. You feel for the guy. And I think Radcliffe had a hard job, too, is basically, like I said, a prop through the first half of it to hang in there and gradually turn up his performance as Dano gets a little further and further over the edge. Take subtlety. I mean, subtlety in a movie that basically revolves around a dead guy's farts. Dead guy, yeah. It's certainly interesting. I think it's absolutely worth a watch. And it's kind of another example. Radcliffe has done a couple. He's doing stuff he wants to do. He's made his money from, you know, the Wizards. So he doesn't need anything. He just shows up in stuff he likes. And this, I thought, the premise is kind of interesting. I guess I didn't realize that it was going to be as much gross out humor as it was. But I wasn't disappointed. It was not the movie I thought it was going to be going in. But I think it's absolutely worth a watch.
My number four, we mentioned directors. It's from a fantastic director, but not one known for laughs and giggles. It is from 2014, written and directed by Adam Egoyan, you know, the guy from the Dead Children on the Bus movie. It's The Captive, starring Rosario Dawson, Mary Alinos, Kevin Durand. Ryan Reynolds basically carries the movie. Ryan Reynolds is a father who, 8 years ago, his 9-year-old daughter was taken from the back of his truck, and since then, he's been investigated as the main suspect. Rosario Dawson's there as the agent trying to crack down on crimes against children, including his. And then Alexia Fast is Cass, who was abducted 8 years ago and has been basically locked in a basement doing webcam shows since then. It's really, really dark. And this is Ryan Reynolds' being what I don't think people realize Ryan Reynolds can do. He does the great charismatic comedy guy. He's not the greatest action star, but this is him. He's a legit force in this movie. Like, he's a father who lost his daughter 8 years ago, who blames himself for leaving her in his truck.
This is something you'd see Jake Gyllenhaal doing. You know what I mean?
And that's,
and that would be his kind of role.
I was going to bring up Jake Gyllenhaal because this came out in 2014, shortly after Prisoners, another dark movie about missing kids starring a great cast. So this, we talk about the Deep Impact Armageddon thing and the volcano and whatever the other volcano.
Dante's Peak.
Yes. Like, we talk about those, and I feel like this kind of got shoved under the rug because we just watched Prisoners, which bummed us the fuck out. Adam Egoyan doing Prisoners, essentially. I don't think people were ready for that. It's not as dark as I would expect from Adam Egoyan. I say that about a movie about a 9-year-old being abducted and forced to do webcam shows for the next 8 years. But Ryan Reynolds is really good in this movie. Like, he's not the Ryan Reynolds that you know in this movie. He's a dad who blames himself for losing a daughter who's been facing investigation for 8 years, who he's just trying to fight to find out if his daughter's still alive, and there are still people trying to fight to prove that he's the one that killed her. So it's got its heartbreaking moments. As a father, it's terrifying. And to find out after 8 years that your missing daughter is alive, and then that reunion, there are moments in this movie that they have to hit, and it hits it really well. It's a really, really good movie that I feel like went under the radar. I think it's on Amazon or something. Like, it's able to watch for free. It's a really, really good movie driven by Ryan Reynolds. Rosario Dawson's also Rosario Dawson in it, which is always a good thing. So,
not to go keep going back to Prisoners, but another great Paul Dano role. I just want to pound the drum for him today. My number three is from a director that sneakily I love. He doesn't have a giant filmography, especially on the directorial side, but he has directed three movies, and I've loved all three of them. Jeremy Solner gave us Murder Party in 2007, which we talked about a while ago. I can't remember why.
I think it was on one of our random Halloween episodes of movies to watch.
Maybe, yeah. It's one of those ones that I think it takes a turn. It maybe isn't the movie that you expect, but it unfolds in a way that after seeing the kids that are putting on this murder party and how douchey they are, it unfolds in a very satisfying way, and it ends kind of the best possible way that you could hope for. And then he followed that up with Blue Ruin from 2013.
So good.
Which, yeah, is intense, and it's brutal, and it starts that way, and it ends even more so. And that brutality, I think, he kept right along into 2015's The Green Room, starring Anton Yelchin, Imogen Poots, Alia Shawkat, and Patrick Stewart.
Macon Blair, who was also in Murder Party and Blue Ruin.
He certainly has his muse. This is one that I think probably went under the radar. Although, if you read online about this movie, the popular sentiment, the reviews are great. It's one of the ones that probably snuck under the radar because it had a weird release. It was released in May. It was a summer release.
I don't even think it ever got wide.
Yeah, I don't think it did. I know we
planned an episode around it, and yeah, the date got moved around enough because we did a neo-Nazi episode.
Yes.
Around the time this was supposed to come out, but it didn't come out when we did the episode.
Yes. I mean, I ended up having to wait to see it on DVD, which I don't know if I had seen it in time to make our halftime list for that year, but I know it was a movie that we both talked about.
I know it was on my halftime, or it wasn't on my halftime show. It was
on
my
the year
end.
Yeah. Cause it was that good. It is brutal. Solner takes such good care of his characters and lets you get to know them so that when bad things start to happen to them, to me, it was almost Neil Marshall, like the way that he made the deaths matter, which is one of the biggest compliments that we could give a horror director on this show because of how much we love Neil Marshall. And he built a movie that felt so gritty and dirty, like the clubs that this band would be playing in. The movie felt tonally like it fit there. I sort of hate bringing up this movie because when you do, this is one of Yelchin's last performances, and I think it's one of his best.
He's so good in this movie.
He is great, and it sucks because we'd like to see him do a bunch of stuff. If the next Star Trek were to happen, yeah, I'd like to see him do that too. But stuff like this, he was absolutely great in this movie. He was making some really cool stuff. If nobody else saw it, it didn't matter. I mean, it was still really, really good. And Green Room is an outstanding example of that. It's a movie that probably doesn't appeal to everyone, but if you're a fan of the genre, you're going to dig it.
This was my number two, but I'll say it's my number three just for flow. I love Solner. I wasn't as nuts about Murder Party. I enjoy it, but Blue Ruin kicked me in the balls, and I loved it for it. This gave me that same feelings. He had a great cast. I mean, the band was Joe Cole, who's also a great actor, Callum Turner, and Alia Shawkat, and then Anton Yelchin. That's a solid core of a cast. Then you throw in Macon Blair, Mark Webber, who is the best I've ever seen him, and of course Patrick Stewart, Imogen Poots. Bottle movie is one way to say it. Like, it's essentially everything takes place in that. Once things start happening, you're in one place. That's sometimes the most terrifying of horror movies. You brought up Neil Marshall. It's very much like The Descent. The club is the cave. They don't have a way out of it. And it escalates. And I mean, it feels real at the time. It's this band that they're just trying to get from show to show. A show falls through. They're willing to jump on any show possible. And they do. Turns out they're playing with a bunch of Nazis. And they do the punk rock thing, and they go up there, and they make fun of Nazis. The chain of events is believable, it's reasonable, and then stuff starts to happen, and it's all done in that one building, essentially, for 70% of it. And it's terrifying, it's brutal. You said the deaths matter, because you're talking about the core of like four or five people make this movie work. Mm-hmm. It's just so solidly done. And it's depressing because this is the Anton Yelchin I love. Like, he brings himself to everything he does. And he's one of those that you still see Anton Yelchin no matter what he does, but he's doing a damn good job. Like, he doesn't transform himself. He's not...
He looks the same in every role.
Yeah, he's not going undercover. Like, he's not stretching himself too thin, but he's committing himself to everything. And I think that says a lot, that I'm not going to compare his character in Green Room to Charlie Bartlett, you know? Like, it's like he did different stuff while still being true to who he is, and he was so good on screen. And I've loved Anton Yelchin for so long, ever since Huff on Showtime. That show was so good. I've always been a Yelchin fan, and it still bums me out. Like, yeah, actors die all the time, but there are certain actors that when I catch them, it's like, I get sad. Like, him and Gandolfini are probably the two that come to mind the most, because, like,
recently.
Yeah, because I feel like they still had a ton of good work in them. Like, The Drop was one of Gandolfini's last ones. Yeah. His intensity in that movie is incredible, just like Anton Yelchin in here. And it builds up, and it's, I love a good payoff, and just the last bit of dialogue between him and Poots. It's so perfect, and it kind of sums everything up perfectly. I absolutely love this movie.
My number two from 2015, we mentioned how A24 tends to have really good casts, and that is certainly the case for Yorgos Lanthimos' The Lobster, starring Colin Farrell, Rachel Weisz, John C. Reilly. A ton of people kind of show up in this movie here and there. It was nominated for, I think, like, Best Original Screenplay.
Should have won based on the word original.
That is true. I mentioned that there's not really things that tie these movies together. If there is one thing that might tie them together, it's the fact that A24 seems to look for unique stories, whether it is a farting dead body or it's a story about singles that get put in a hotel, and if you can't find a mate in this hotel in a certain amount of time, you're going to be turned into an animal. Again, you've got to kind of suspend your disbelief and just buy into the rules of this universe, a little bit like Swiss Army Man. Otherwise, you're just going to think that it's dumb. But if you can, what you get, I think, is a super unique love story between Colin Farrell and Rachel Weisz. On the one hand, it is a very, very, very dark comedy. So I guess you could say that it's romantic dark comedy. And as much as it lampoons, you know, this idea of forcing a relationship on everyone, you're only valid as a human being if you are part of a relationship, it also kind of takes a look at the people that would react negatively to that and looks at them as just being jealous creatures and makes fun of them too and casts them in a negative light. So it's sort of playing both sides, making everyone look like they're kind of assholes. But the supporting characters in the movie, John C. Reilly's great. You got a couple Bond alums, Ben Whishaw and Lea Seydoux, both show up and they're really, really good. And most of these characters, you never know their name. I guess it doesn't really matter. Ben Whishaw's character, I think, has a limp. John C. Reilly lisps. Surprise there. It's a stretch for him. Rachel Weisz can't really see. So they're more identified by their characteristics as opposed to their names. The only character other than Colin Farrell's David, the only character that you know the name of is the dog. His brother, who went through this, spoiler, didn't turn out well for him. He turned into a dog. Bob the dog, who's one of the best characters in the movie, and you really get attached to that damn dog. The Lobster was one that people either seem to love or they hate. I came out on the love side of it. It doesn't really necessarily go... Well, it certainly doesn't go where you think it's going to go, because I can't imagine trying to roadmap this movie after the first 15 minutes. It could go anywhere. But I think it ends in a sweet place, if not an unexpected, darkly sweet place, I guess.
My number two is also darkly sweet. From 2014, we mentioned they work with either really great directors or with stories that you don't really see from mainstream studios or you haven't really seen before. This one falls into that kind of second category. It's a movie that most mainstream studios would shy away from 2014 still. Written and directed by Gillian Robespierre, starring Jenny Slate. It is Obvious Child. Jenny Slate needs to be a movie star. She's so damn delightful. Like, she's done a lot of great voice work.
She's got that one with her ex.
That they met on. She should be leading more movies. She plays a stand-up comedian who is trying to find her way there. ends up getting pregnant on a one-night stand and now has to face this reality where, do I get an abortion and keep doing what I do, or do I accept this phase of my life and proceed from there? It's the kind of material that a lot of people are going to be turned off on just on the premise, a comedy about an abortion, essentially. But she's so damn charming.
Great material for her.
Yeah.
And for her comedy.
Yeah. And Paul Bergani, Gabby Hoffman, Richard Kind's in there, Jake Lacy. Like, the cast is good, but it's her movie. And she delivers. She's so good. Like, watching this makes me want to see her in every movie ever, because she's so good in this movie. And she's so likable and charming. And there's just something. There's a few actresses that you look at on screen and you just think, like, oh, they belong there. Like, they're not flashy. They're not pinup models. Like Zoe Kazan is one that I think of, where they're so good, and there's something electric about them on screen where you want to watch them do anything. And Jenny Slate gave that kind of performance. And it was only a couple years ago. So I'm hoping she's in more and more movies for sure. She's also really good in Zootopia.
I didn't realize she was in that. I thought it was just about the bunny and Idris Elba. My number one it's going to come as no surprise when I tell you what it is. You may not associate it with A24. It's one of those ones that certainly I can name the director, and I think that by now that the listeners probably could too, as much as I go off about James Ponsoldt. It is his 2013 The Spectacular Now, starring Miles Teller, Shailene Woodley, Kyle Chandler, Brie Larson. Again, she kind of seems to show up in all of our podcasts because she's just everywhere at this point. But at some point, it's probably when one of the Divergent movies came out, we did a Spectacular Now episode for Shailene Woodley, and she's fine in this movie. I love Ponsoldt. I haven't seen The Circle yet. I've heard it's not great, which bums me out a little bit because of that cast and because of how much I do love the director. But if he's got to direct, you know, like a bigger studio movie so that we can get another Spectacular Now, another Smashed, I'm all for that, because I absolutely love those two movies. And I think that he gets wonderful performances out of his cast. And I love me some Miles Teller. This movie, I didn't hate him before that, but this movie made me a fan of Miles Teller, because I think he is so charismatic in this role. And on the one hand, the premise is pretty simple. It's like the opposites attract kind of high school movie, which we've seen literally thousands of times, especially, you know, when I was a kid growing up in the 90s, there were any number of Rachel Lee Cook movies that were just that. And on the one hand, Spectacular Now is that. You have a relatively attractive actress that you're supposed to believe doesn't have a boyfriend because they're shy and she reads science fiction novels, as if in 2013 that's going to scare off any high school dude. And then you have the party guy in Sutter that really only lives for the now. And how can these two possibly get together? But they do. The chemistry works. It might just show you how good of an actress Shailene Woodley is, because I'm not sure that charisma is something you would associate with her off screen. And maybe it's just because Teller's that good that he can draw it out of her. But I think they're a great couple. They don't belong together. He is certainly not good for her. But somehow you're still, by the end of the movie, you still want them to be together. I think it's a fantastic story about this particular tumultuous time in this kid's life. And the supporting characters are great.
Bob Odenkirk steals every scene he's in. When I think of this movie, I think of his scenes.
I was going to mention the dads. Teller has a great scene with his deadbeat dad, Kyle Chandler, and his pseudo-dad in Bob Odenkirk, who owns the clothing store that Sutter works for. Those two scenes are both absolutely phenomenal. He's great with everyone in there. He starts out the movie with Brie Larson, and they've got a couple really good scenes together. I love the graduation scene with the two of them. It is a high school movie. It is a coming-of-age story, but it doesn't seem dumbed down for anybody. If you're in high school, I could see where you might relate to this. If you're somebody who's been out of high school for a long time, I still think there's enjoyment in this. I think it's a great character piece.
Just the scene with Odenkirk gets me. It's one of my favorite exchanges of dialogue in a movie ever, of all movies I've ever seen. Is he says he can only keep one employee, and he'd like it to be him if he can stop drinking. And Miles Teller says, I don't think I can do that. Bob Odenkirk simply says, I guess if this is the time where if I was your dad, I would give you a lecture. And he says, if you were my dad, you wouldn't have to. Like, it's just such a good exchange. And Odenkirk has this likability and this sincerity in everything he does. And, like, I've loved Odenkirk since Mr. Show. So to see him do this kind of stuff, and especially on, like, Better Call Saul, where he's this terrible guy, but there's this sincerity that you just want him to – you want him to be able to just fix this kid. Like, you want him to be the one that makes everything okay. It is a really, really good movie. It would have made my top five, but I left it off because it's one of those that I figured would be on yours.
That's a solid guess.
Like this and The Lobster I left off because I figured for sure they'd be on yours. My number one, I thought we might have crossover. I've said many times, my two favorite movies of all time, one and two, would be 28 Days Later and probably Sunshine, both written by Alex Garland. So I don't think it's a shock that my number one is written and directed by Alex Garland. It is from 2014. Again, big year for them in my eyes. I think all of my movies might be from that year. It is Ex Machina, starring Alicia Vikander, Domhnall Gleeson, and Oscar Isaac. And that's it. Vikander won an Oscar. Not for this. Should have been for this. She won an Oscar the same year. Oscar Isaac, Domhnall Gleeson could have been. It's just such a good movie. We talk about Green Room, where it's a bottle movie. It takes place in one space. This is the same thing. It's Oscar Isaac's mansion. It's Domhnall Gleeson getting to know this robot who, spoiler alert, has its own agenda. Everybody's working with their own agenda in this movie, and it's done so well because it does focus on these three actors who are all phenomenal, some of the best working right now, at their best, with a great director, with a great script, one of the best screenwriters, I think, out there. Everything about this movie is great, and there was no reason it shouldn't have been great. And even with those expectations, I kind of feel like it exceeded them, because I liked it a lot more than I expected going in, and I expected to love it. It's so good to get from point A to point B to see all the way to the end, which is a kick in the ass that I really didn't see coming but loved. Everything about this movie is so good. And it's the perfect kind of A24 movie. Like, yeah. These are – the movies aren't similar, but there's kind of that feel that, like, oh, that's an A24 movie. Because there's something unique about it.
Yeah, it's a unique story. And watching the arc of Vikander's character, I mean, the entire movie revolves around Domhnall Gleeson trying to determine whether or not this character – can pass for a human, and at the end of the movie she does probably the most human thing you would expect someone to do. So I guess he learns that she passes. That movie certainly passes. That was, I believe, nominated for Best Picture that year, wasn't it?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah. I tried to leave off a lot of the...
I left off Room because I thought for sure it'd be on yours because I know you like that movie.
Yeah, and that's one that people...
Another Brie Larson.
Yeah. It's hard to put movies like Room or even Moonlight with a particular studio. Even like larger studios, you may not know, unless it's Marvel or really Disney, you know what I mean? You may not know what belongs to where. Pixar. These are a couple studios that are maybe transcendent, but there's certainly so many that we could have gone through. And Ex Machina was one I left off just because it's a phenomenal movie. So is Room. And I thought, you know, I'd rather take a swing at talking about like The Swiss Army Man, because I don't know when that might come up again. I feel like we're contractually obligated, at least in the also-ran section, to mention Life After Beth. And the only reason it doesn't make the list is because it's an Aubrey Plaza movie and not really an Anna Kendrick movie.
It's not even on my also-rans, yeah. Despite Anna Kendrick.
I'll put it on my also-rans because of Anna Kendrick.
I have a ton. Enemy. With Jake Gyllenhaal, it was Villeneuve's follow-up to Prisoners, which is great. I feel like this one went under the radar. It's powerful Gyllenhaal. A Most Violent Year, which is
Oscar Isaac,
And Jessica Chastain. Like, that's a powerhouse.
It's a great cast. The movie, not
It wasn't good. As good as I wanted it to be. Slow West, The Monster, which is a random movie with Zoe Kazan that has every right to be terrible. Like, it's just a car breaks down in the woods and there's a monster. But it's really good because it's approached differently. It's similar to The Witch, where it's driven by a performance. And Zoe Kazan is one of those actresses that I think is really, really good in everything. And she carries that movie, The Rover, with Pattinson and Guy Pearce. I really, really liked. I mean, there's so many.
I enjoyed Tusk. I was probably that guy, which I guess is sort of a movie made on a lark anyway. Yeah. Kevin Smith on his podcast basically, I guess, dared the listeners to make him make Tusk. And he did, and for what it was, like, it's probably better than it had a right to be.
But, I mean, they did Barely Lethal, which was okay. Mississippi Grind, Ben Mendelsohn and Ryan Reynolds, really, really good. That's directed by Ryan Fleck and Anna Boden, who are doing Captain Marvel with Brie Larson. Mm-hmm. You could just go on. Like, there's so many.
Yeah, I think we could probably...
Equals was good.
We could easily
Force from America was good.
Another list on their stuff, especially after the end of the year.
Well, just coming up this year, Free Fire was this year. The Disaster Artist is later this year. It Comes at Night is this week. A Ghost Story is this year. Mm. Those are four movies I'm really, really excited to see. Free Fire stars Brie Larson, by the way.
Franco is directing The Disaster Artist,
and starring,
too. Which I feel like DVD sales of The Room are going to spike again, as if Tommy Wiseau needs any more notoriety for that pile of garbage. But that's a fascinating dude.
Starring him and his brother.
Yeah.
And they're putting it out in awards season.
Yeah. I think Seth Rogen's in there, too. Hannibal Buress. That's a studio that, like... If I know they're going to put something out, a lot like Good Actors, if Brie Larson picks something at this point, like, I'll see it.
Because Ghost Story, it's Casey Affleck with a sheet over his head.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the movie. I'm sold.
Yeah, and it's not just because I need a sheet over Casey Affleck, but just that's a love story, a different look at it, I suppose. But everything A24 does is kind of a different look at whatever the subject is. But that's a group that if they're... willing to distribute something, it's because they've seen something in it that isn't quite like whatever else you're getting. And believe me, I love going to the theater and watching whatever big tentpole a Spider-Man movie that's coming out. I'm not trying to be film snob here, but if you want to be film snob, you could do worse than A24. The lead you in the right direction.
For sure. But yeah, that was our first studio movie, and I think that's the best one to start with, and I don't know if we'll ever do another one, but It Comes at Night, I'm excited for. I like all our movies. I like most of the ones that we mentioned. That was it for this week. Next week, we have another episode.
We do. Next week, of all the movies for you to forget we're doing.
Next week, two water people underwater. I forget the name of it.
It's 40 leagues.
47 liters or 47 meters.
Yeah.
It's a shark movie.
It's The Shallows, but under the water.
With Mandy Moore and another girl. So we are doing the sharkiest
the preeminent
of shark movies.
Shark movie.
Deep Blue Sea.
Right, yeah, not Jaws.
To celebrate shark movies. So that'll be fun. Our hat is like a shark's fin. Deepest, bluest. Another, that's the LL. I don't know. I don't understand the lyrics. Look at LL Cool J weirdly. Not me. I'm just reciting his poetry. But yeah, we'll be back next week as we take a visit to Deep Blue Sea. And until then,
keep it up.